Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, April 18th, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. As always, drop us an email, get in touch with us by sending something to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. So much ground to cover this week. We must get started. Hey, first guest, are you ready to go?
I am.
All right, let's do it. Ms. Guy is a cutting-edge songwriter, a solo artist, a dynamic lead singer, and an incredible DJ. He co-wrote the hit single Charm Alarm with Debbie Harry, which was certified gold. Gold, Ms. Guy. He co-produced the Blondie hit In the Flesh and co-wrote Stay Away from Pretty Boys with Boy George. With the Toilet Boys, Ms. Guy toured all over the world with Blondie, the Ramones, Joan Jett, the Donnas, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, so many more. As a DJ, Ms. Guy achieved legendary status at Squeezebox, and you can sure as heck bet that I have seen some spinning there. And just this year, he released his solo EP, Dumb Blonde, which includes the incredible title track, which we will play, a love ballad called Don't Stop, a 70s teen pop track called Magic, dance electro hit Take It Off, and the ethereal Sometimes. Ms. Guy, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Hi, Ken. Thanks for having me.
It's so great to have you on the show. We have so much to talk about. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Well, let's do a little The Learning Annex with Ms. Guy for all of our listeners who want to be you. And holy cow, have we gotten emails from folks who want to be you. How would you break down your career path for our listeners? Do you have a sense? Let's start easier. Do you have a sense that you have done so much?
Sometimes, you know, I mean, if I talk to my mom and she'll be like, you know, I can't believe you've been all over the world and you played with all of your favorite bands, you know, from when you were a kid. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, wow, I have done some cool things.
You've done a lot.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's exciting when, like, when you were just saying all of that, I was like, oh, my God, I did do that.
You did do that.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's weird because I never really had much of a plan.
Oh, okay.
And, so when things would happen, I mean, I just wanted to play music and I've always loved music. I grew up in a musical home, and I wanted to make a living playing music, which I have been for almost 20 years now. I mean, you know, between DJing and live stuff.
Yeah.
And I really love performing live. I love concerts. I love going to concerts. I love playing shows. I love the whole world. I love touring. And so I just sort of knew that I would always do that somehow. But I didn't really know how because I didn't know anybody who had done it. I mean, you know, my dad was in a band and they had a little bit of success on the West Coast in the early 70s. They opened for Ike and Tina Turner and
wow.
You know, toured with Ike and Tina Turner and did some cool stuff like that. But, you know, he had been out of that world for many years by the time I moved to New York and got started with my band. So I just sort of, I met these guys and we started the Toilet Boys and we just sort of all wanted to have fun, and we did for the most part. And thankfully, a lot of the people that we loved, you know, a lot of our heroes liked what we were doing. And so they started to come see us play, and then some of them would ask us to play with them. And it was all just really overwhelming and exciting. But like I said, it was just sort of something that happened, and it's really, you can't explain it. It just sort of was, I guess the rock gods were smiling upon us at that time.
Well, let's talk about the Toilet Boys. When the Toilet Boys Behind the Music VH1 special comes out, which it will, it's going to come out at some point, what is going to surprise us most to learn about you all?
That we were all sort of really different musically as far as our true love, but we had obviously common links, I guess, that got us to do what we did, but
mm-hmm.
we, you know, musically, like when we were on tour, it was hard to agree upon many things to listen to that we all liked. But I mean, you know, I don't know, I guess I can't speak for those guys so much because I'm sure they could tell you more than I could. But as for myself, I guess the thing that maybe a lot of people don't know or are surprised to learn is that I'm quite shy. Because my frontman persona with the Toilet Boys was a very confident character.
Yeah.
And I guess I just sort of needed that to get me through, because I've been shy my whole life, and I, you know, it takes a lot of nerve to get on stage, period, no matter how you're dressed, but especially the way I was dressing. But in some weird way, although most people would look at the way I dressed and think I could never step foot in public looking like that, that helped me with my confidence and helped me feel like I could spread my wings and fly, whereas without all of that, I couldn't. Now I'm a lot more comfortable being casual or getting on stage with less makeup, or, you know, I don't have to do all of that. But I love doing all that.
Well, how would you describe, if someone said, Miss Guy, what is your signature style? How would you describe your style to folks?
Glamorous, but casual.
Nice.
I don't know. I guess, you know, I was talking with a designer friend of mine yesterday, and we were kind of going over, like, my looks for stage these days. And
mm-hmm.
Obviously with the Toilet Boys, you know, what I wore, I didn't walk off stage and then go out to a restaurant.
Right.
And not get up.
Never?
I went out to parties and I out on the street like that, but I didn't go out to restaurants or the movies dressed like that.
Okay.
But, you know, I think my style is like, I can go on stage and sing and perform, and then I could go to a nice restaurant afterwards for a party and be comfortable. And,
yeah.
And so I guess that stems from my love of, like, Cher and Bob Mackey. Their collaboration together was so perfect to me because it was, like, the most glamorous. She wore it very casually, and she also fixed a lot of things that I like to do, like denim with sequins. And back when she was doing it, of course, it was a lot more unique, and
right.
Nobody really did that but her. And I was always really obsessed with her style. And so I've always liked my look. Pretty much has always been for DJing or just going out, not necessarily stage, but, you know, tight jeans and high-heeled boots and, like, some sort of nice shiny jacket or something.
Nice.
And a face full of makeup, of course.
And, of course, a face full of makeup. Now, I was looking back over our guest list over the past 4 years, and I'm a little nervous I'm about to offend someone by saying what I'm about to say. I do think that you are our first DJ that we've ever had on the show.
Oh, really? Wow.
Now, someone's going to write and said, I played an iPod at someone's party once, but that doesn't
right.
count. What is the definition? Are we corrupting these days the definition of DJ? I feel like there's so many people say, oh, yeah, I totally DJ. I used my iPod.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I started DJing by chance. It wasn't anything I wanted to do at all. I had a huge record collection since I started buying records at 8 years old or something.
Mm-hmm.
I inherited my dad's records and my older brother's records and my sister's records. So I had a huge collection up until about 10 years ago. I gave it all away. But people would say, you should DJ. And I have a pretty big knowledge of music, you
mm-hmm.
know, lots of different genres and whatever. So people would always say you should DJ, and this was at a time in the early 90s when there weren't a lot of DJs. I mean, there were a lot of club DJs and dance DJs, of course, but there weren't a lot of rock DJs, and certainly in the gay world, there were no rock DJs.
Right.
Well, I mean, other than, like, Jane County, and there were some others in New York that did things from time to time, but nothing that had either lasted or was happening at the time. So I just sort of filled in for someone. A friend of mine was doing a party and needed a DJ, so I just was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And then they liked me, and I DJed ever since. And so, you know, it's fun. And it used to be a DJ was defined by his or her record collection or, you know, CD collection.
Mm-hmm.
But when I started, I was doing vinyl and a little bit of CDs. And that was where you would be able to sort of really do well, because if you had a great collection. And so nowadays everybody has everything they want at their fingertips, which I love, and I use my computer now for the past 5 or 7 years and I love it. But, you know, anyone can just Shazam what you're playing, so, you know, everyone can get whatever they want whenever they want. So it doesn't really matter what kind of collection you have. I mean, it helps if you know a lot about music, which
right.
I think is been my saving grace and has been able to keep me going longer than I ever thought I would. But as a DJ, but you know, I think that pretty much it's true. Everybody is a DJ these days, and I like to say that anyway. But, you know, not everybody's a good DJ.
Right.
So there are a lot of crappy DJs out there, but there are some good DJs too. And, you know, it's like, it just depends on what your taste is, I suppose. And if you like what somebody's doing, then they're a good DJ, but that doesn't barely mean that somebody else is going to think they're a good DJ. So it's all sort of up to the individual, I suppose. But, I work all over the world and have been, and, you know, I feel confident in my DJing skills, so I don't ever feel threatened. But I kind of laugh sometimes when it's like, you know, Paris Hilton DJed at, you know, now it's like anybody that's famous can get a guest DJing spot.
Lindsay Lohan was spinning it. No, she wasn't.
Right. She was telling the DJ in the booth what to play. She tried doing that to me once at some gig, and I told her no. But, you know, anyway, I think that there are many amazing DJs out there, and you know, now more than ever, I think that certain DJs, especially in the dance world, you know, really become, they're like rock stars now. I mean, they play these huge venues, and people, you know, go and pay to watch them DJ, and, you know, they dance around and jump around, but it's very weird to me to see that, like, because they're not rock stars to me. I mean, I think that it's, for me, it's two different worlds and always has been. And I've DJed in places outside of the U.S. or wherever where people would come and they would have me set up on the stage and people are watching me DJ and taking photos and yelling my name. And it's just sort of weird because, you know, I mean, I think that comes from because they know me from my music, you know, or the band or whatever. But it's sort of uncomfortable because when I'm in performance mode, that's totally different than DJ mode. But obviously, you know, DJs that are touring and playing these big venues, that's what they do. And so that's their way of performing, I suppose. But I don't really have any interest in being a performance DJ.
Gotcha. Well, I mentioned Squeezebox in your bio. For folks who never had the opportunity to go to Squeezebox, it was a scene, was it not?
Oh, yeah.
What did folks miss out on? Because I went once... it didn't go well for me. I did not feel like I wore the right outfit, and I'm still a little bit upset about it.
Ah, well, I mean, I think that that was probably just your own sort of idea of based on what you saw other people wearing.
Right.
But I'm sure you looked great, and I think that, I mean, some people may say that I'm full of when I say this, but you know, we really wanted to, and anyone and everyone to feel welcome there. And, you know, although it was started out as mostly a gay party, we wanted everyone to feel comfortable, but we didn't want anyone coming in there and trying to start. And there was a sign at the front that said, you know, this is a gay party. If you can't handle it, off.
Right.
Because we wanted all our straight friends to come and feel welcome, but we didn't want anybody showing up and trying to start trouble.
Right.
But, you know, really, you know, we wanted it just a really fun mix, and we got that for sure. I mean, more than we ever could have imagined. And all the people that we loved and admired were showing up to the party. And you know, we kind of romanticized the whole 70s Maxes and CBGBs and Studio 54 and that whole world that we missed. And, you know, so it was really cool when people from those days and those scenes were coming to Squeezebox. And, you know, a lot of great people came and just hung out, and a lot of great people came and got on stage and performed, and people DJed with me, and amazing people were coming there, and they really felt comfortable there because we weren't doing what everybody else started doing later and everybody does now, which is like take a million photos and sell it to the papers.
Right.
So anyone could come. That's what John Waters said, why he always loved it there, because you could go and get crazy and it would be all over the papers the next day because we didn't really allow press in there. You know, we would let people do stories on it occasionally, like it's great if we loved the magazine or whatever, but we didn't just, it wasn't like photographers hanging out in there. And plus it was at a time when not everybody had a camera. So,
right.
But I love that. And I love that
it was a better time.
Not really. I mean, it was a different time.
It was different.
It had its good things and it had its bad things, you know. But I love taking photos, and I love how I can miss a party but see a ton of photos on Facebook. And
right.
And like, oh, well, I didn't really miss it because I saw what everyone wore and I saw what was going on. But, you know, I totally am happy in the here and now. Thank God. I mean, I don't think it would be a fun place to be if you're longing for another time in your life.
And right.
So I certainly had a lot of great times with my band in those days, and you know, that party for me, I was lucky to be a part of it, but I would have been there whether I was working or not. It was a great gig, but it was like, I don't miss those days. Those were my funnest club days for sure, but I wouldn't want to relive them, and I don't long for them. You know, you got to sort of live in the moment and be optimistic and happy about the future and the way things are now. And change, I always like to embrace change. And so,
do you feel like that sort of scene can still be found in New York City and in any cities? Because, I mean, a lot of folks in the gay community lament that, oh, but that feel of Squeezebox and just kind of that whole time, you just can't find that anymore.
Yeah, no, you can't. I mean, I haven't been to every city, but a lot of cities I've been to, I mean, you know, different cities have their different moments in nightlife and when their city is thriving with a scene, you know. But New York right now, you know, there's some fun things happening, and L.A. can be really fun, and I love London. But, you know, it's just, I'm speaking only for New York right now, but the thing I find that's most different about the 90s and is just that there's a lot more rules now, and
yeah.
It's less free. Like, you could literally go anywhere and get in and smoke and do drugs and drink and have sex in the bathroom and walk, you know, do whatever, and there were no rules. Now everything is just like going to a school dance. I mean, it's like between like everyone getting carded at the door, to no smoking, to like, you can't sit there. You can't stand in this hallway right now.
Right.
Keep it moving, people. It's like, what is this? Are we at a like junior high dance in the Midwest? Like, that's what bums me out the most. 21-year-olds today in New York are having just as much fun as any of us did when we were 21, you know? But it's just, and that's all they know. So they don't, that's not a big deal to them to like, but for me, it's just like, ugh, I hate that. I mean, I went to a party once at some club and I was chewing gum, and the bouncer at the door told me I had to spit my gum out because there was no gum chewing allowed in New York City.
Oh my.
In the 2000s. And I was like, I seriously have not been told to spit my gum out since junior high. It was so insane. So that is the difference. And so therefore with rules, it's harder to have a more fun, wild time because you have someone breathing down your neck telling you to stop it.
Did you not just respond by saying, excuse me, please spit out your gum? Excuse me, I know Debbie Harry. I would have just said that.
I might have been with Debbie.
There you go.
But, you know, sometimes people don't care. I mean, you know, I don't know. I was so floored that I think I just frowned like and looked puzzled and then put my gum in the trash can that was there. But it was very bizarre. It was one of the weirdest things that's ever happened to me.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, before we talk about your music, which we're about to talk about, can you tell us a little bit about what that transition was like for you, going from the Toilet Boys to really setting out as a solo artist? What was the most eye-opening part of that experience?
Well, it happened gradually after my band broke up. I mean, you know, or went on hiatus or whatever we'd want to.
Those are two very different things.
I know, we broke up, but okay. That's what we were calling it, but, you know, at a time. But I think that was just so that, you know, I was very upset, and it was really hard
and
difficult to sort of, but it you know, on the bright side, it made me, you know, after about 6 months of not doing anything musical, I started working, writing and recording with Super Buddha, the producers who did this record for me. And so that was really good. I got to do stuff that I never would have done with the Toilet Boys because we were more sort of rock-based.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to do a lot of different genres. And I have a couple more EPs coming out in this year. Like, and so there'll be more genres on those EPs. And I just really wanted to sort of see what I could do in the studio and see what would work and what I could actually get away with. And so it's been a long time, and I just now sort of felt like I'm ready, and then got the songs together and whatever. But I it's been challenging at times because, you know, when you're doing stuff with a band, you have four other people that
right.
you can get out there with and think you're tough and cool and whatever. But when you're on your own, it's just you. And it's like, you know, it's kind of intimidating. And I, you know, I when I started the Toilet Boys, I didn't have anything before that that people could compare it to. So I wasn't thinking, oh, well, you know, this fan is going to want me to do a little bit of that. And now with this, it's like I keep thinking, like, you know, oh, I have to sort of try to, you know, I don't want to lose Toilet Boys fans, but I want to gain more fans. But, you know, I've had people say, well, why aren't you doing more rock like the Toilet Boys and blah, blah, blah. So it's like you want to try to please your fan base.
Right.
But you want to kind of do more than what, you know, you were doing. And so it's been a very fun but intimidating process, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this is the part of the show, Miss Guy, where you tell our listening audience a little bit about what makes you tick. We're going to list off some of the songs that we are going to be playing for this week's episode. We'll just do two of them. And then you tell us what these songs say about Miss Guy. It's a little self-analysis for our listening audience. And this is always a little bit more fun with the folks who actually wrote this music, because you're going to give us some insight into who the artist is. Start off with where we, of course, must start out. What does Dumb Blonde say about Miss Guy?
Well, I feel that it's a bit autobiographical, and it's sort of, I thought it was a good way of talking about my days with the Toilet Boys and that what I was doing with the Toilet Boys and where I'm trying to go. And also, I've been obsessed with blondes throughout history who have dumb blonde characters but weren't really dumb. And I suppose it's sort of an homage to Marilyn and Brigitte Bardot and Mamie Van Doren and Debbie and Donna and all the blondes that I've loved and still love. And I guess it's a way of shedding my Toilet Boys image without coming out in like a mustache and I don't know, some kind of weird butch look. I mean, I still want to keep the glam thing happening.
Oh, yeah.
But I wanted to sort of shed that sort of trashy street walking character that I was doing with the Toilet Boys, which was so much fun. And I can still pull it off if I have to, because we play from time to time. But it's not where I'm at these days. I definitely feel like I've moved on.
Yes, there you go. All right, I'm only going to make you do one more. And this is, I love this tune. What does Magic say about Miss Guy?
I guess that's a big sort of expression of how I feel about life and my life and my friends and where I'm at right now. I really like the idea of magic and being excited by something still after so many years of living in New York and being in the music industry and not feeling like I'm just jaded now, because I get really excited over things. And that makes me happy, because I don't want to be some jaded New Yorker that feels like they've done it all and seen it all. And so I think that there's magic everywhere you look, and you just have to sort of look for it, and it will be there.
Nice. That was a good one. That was a good one. Now, where can folks go to learn more about all the cool things that you are doing?
Well, missguy.net, of course, is always a good place to start. And then from there, I think you can find me on Twitter and Facebook and all of those other things, Tumblr and all of that stuff, which is a lot of fun and also sometimes really annoying. But for the most part, it's fun. I mean, God, if I would have had this all that stuff during the Toilet Boys days, it would have been really amazing. It's just so easy, like bands on tour now can just be like, oh, you know, just, we just did this, this, and this. And it was like, you know, in the old days, you had to wait for the magazine to come out to say what you wanted to say.
Right.
But I love social media. I think it's really cool.
But up close and in person, say I'm hanging around on a Thursday night in New York City and I have nothing to do, is there anywhere for me to go?
Sorry.
No. Yeah. I'm just saying I'm providing another outlet for folks to check out what you're doing.
Oh, well, you can always find out where I'm DJing or playing on those places that I mentioned.
Love
before.
It.
But Thursday nights, there's this really fun party happening in New York at Hotel Chantel, and I DJ in the basement. It's like three floors. And each floor is really fun and different. And I have to say, it gets pretty wild. Like, there's a couple of us that DJ downstairs, and I'll hang out when I'm done DJing and just, like, dance till 3 in the morning, even though I don't have to be there any longer because I'm done DJing. But it's that fun.
It's that fun.
You know, yeah, this old clown that's been in New York all these years can still kick up its heels and have a good time. But, yeah, it is. It's a fun party. And, you know, I'm always out and about, and I have friends that do a lot of fun parties in New York. And when I'm here, I try to stop by whenever I can.
Now, if I call you beforehand, will you tell me what to wear before I go to the basement of Hotel Chantel?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
I'll style you.
Oh, I need styling. See, that's the problem. This is why I do radio, because I need styling. So you'll help me with that.
Sure.
All right.
I like to help my friends get dressed, and I always offer. I mean, I'm opinionated, so I can't really help it. So, but yeah, I mean, doesn't everyone need help with what they wear? You know, I mean, I always ask people what they think with what I'm wearing. But I mean, ultimately, you have to wear what makes you feel most special and feel good and feel like, you know, you look good, and whatever makes you feel good is the right thing to wear. Not so if you have five friends saying, wear the pink studded belt, but you feel more comfortable in the black studded belt, then wear the black studded belt.
Oh, see, now I feel like I need a studded belt. See, it's all going awry.
No one needs a studded belt.
The only thing I've learned thus far is to spit out my gum. Now I got to get a studded belt and everything. There's a lot of work I need.
I know. It's a lot to think about. It's never ending, really.
It's never ending.
You can chew gum at the Thursday night party.
So. Oh, okay. We have that permission.
We'll let you chew gum. I'll even give you some.
Well, Miss Guy, this show is all about celebrating people who are using their voice, and you are such an amazing example of just using your own unique voice in such a variety of medium, and we just so appreciate it on behalf of the community. You're going to keep using your voice in this way?
Of course I am. That's part of the fun of doing all of this.
Love it.
And I try to be encouraging to people and say what I want to say without sounding like a, you know, but I try to be supportive and encouraging of young musicians and young DJs and all of that. So I try to do what I can, Ken. Thank you for having
you
me.
You do it well. Folks need to stroll on over to anywhere fine music is sold, download all the songs from Dumb Blonde. Miss Guy, an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Looking forward to checking out more of your music soon.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for being so sweet.
All the best.
You too. Talk soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Girl.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, you know, there's nothing we love more than telling you about amazing folks doing incredible things to get people to use their voice. And here to talk about yet another fantastic example is our favorite lawyer, LGBT rights advocate, diversity leader, and new media expert, Jimmy Nguyen. And for her first appearance on This Show Is So Gay, Liesl Reinhart from Speak Theater Arts. Jimmy and Liesl, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you. Man. My God, I hope I wore the right shoes.
I know.
Thanks for having me back, and I'm glad to bring this time my friend Liesl Reinhart, who is a great supporter of the LGBT community, because every gay person and gay group needs a fabulous straight woman to help them.
Look at that. How is the pressure of being the straight woman, Liesl?
Well, it's fun sometimes.
Okay.
Because you can get a lot of attention.
Yes.
But at the same time, sometimes you feel like, you know, you're a little awkward in the room.
Right.
And so I enjoy it, but it's, you know, everybody dreams at some point of being a gay man, and that's magnified for me sometimes, and I'm just not in on the joke.
We'll make it work. We'll make it work for this interview. So you guys are collaborating on quite the cool project out there on that other coast. Jimmy, start us off. What are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about taking the online phenomenon of the It Gets Better project, which, as we all know, was started by Dan Savage with one video that he posted in response to a rash of LGBT teen suicides, to deliver the message to LGBT youth that it indeed does get better. And Liesl will tell you, as she came to me and expressed, she came up with this great idea working with the Gay Men's Chorus of L.A. to take that message on the road and onto stage with theater and music. So that was the idea. So Liesl can tell you all about it.
Where'd the idea come from, Liesl?
Well, it's a good question. I work a lot with young people as an educator. I teach and I work with speech and theater students all the time. And they're always interested in figuring out how to perform about issues that are interesting to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were some students who wanted to bring this kind of an issue to life on stage, and so we started working. It wasn't this particular issue, but sort of a similar issue. And when I was working with the Gay Men's Chorus, and we were trying to figure out how to enhance our high school outreach project that they already do, this AMP project that they have where they go to schools and sing, I was talking with the executive director, and I said, God, you know, what would be really interesting is if we could use the It Gets Better message to build our high school outreach. And we started talking about how that's just such a great message to take to schools. And by the end of our conversation, we said, you know, it's also a really great message to take to grown-ups.
Oh, yeah.
Straight people. And wouldn't that be an interesting way to get this out to people who maybe haven't found the videos or, you know, just haven't connected fully with the project just through the online media? And we started making some calls. Jimmy was actually really integral in trying to make the connections between us and the It Gets Better project folks, and they were so receptive, we couldn't believe it. They are just a big pink yes, and they are so interested in figuring out any way that they can to expand the reach of the message, and pretty soon we were in business.
So from that, we get music, theater, multimedia, a whole original national touring show.
Yeah, it's going to tour performing arts centers around the country. And it won't be the whole Gay Men's Chorus going out. It's going to be a smaller cast, obviously, for logistic reasons. But we'll be touring, and it'll be not just a Performing Arts Center show, but they're going to go out for the whole week before the show, and they're going to go to schools, they're going to go to community centers, they'll go to Elks Club, any place that'll have them. And they're going to talk to people in the community about the state of LGBT issues in their community and how to make things better right now.
Love
and then
it.
The week will end with this big performance on stage. And one of the coolest parts of it, we'll bring on stage a local community chorus who's going to stand in for the Gay Men's Chorus and join into the show itself as a symbolic representation of how communities need to stand up and support the young kids in their community who are struggling right now.
And Jimmy, why do we need an event like this?
Well, I think, as Liesl pointed out, the It Gets Better phenomenon has been terrific online. But the people who need to hear this message most are not, you know, pardon the pun, the people who we preach the choir to.
Right.
Which so happens so often in the LGBT community. So many of us who are active in LGBT causes spend our efforts talking and delivering messages of LGBT equality to the people who are already supporters. And when it comes to LGBT youth issues, I think where it's critical we deliver the message is to schools where the students and kids who are struggling with their identity need to hear it, and most importantly to the parents and community members who deal with these kids on a daily basis. And they're the ones who are not going to automatically go online and find the It Gets Better video. And if we can find a way to take that message directly to them in their community, I think that's where it will have greater impact. And there's something about the power of performance and theater and music that will, I think, carry the emotion even further.
Fantastic. Now, Liesl, you're going to be directing the show, are you not?
Yeah, I'm writing and directing the show and working with Morten Kier, who's a platinum-selling recording artist from Denmark, who's recently come to the United States and is working with us as our music director. It'll all be under the umbrella of the artistic direction of E. Jason Armstrong, who is the artistic director of the Gay Men's Chorus. And it's going to be something we do collaboratively throughout the spring, sort of through a series of workshops. We're interviewing members of the chorus to get some of their personal stories and working with some young people. We're incorporating some of the comments that people have made underneath the It Gets Better videos to come up with some interesting scenes. It's very interesting. I've always wondered what people really think in America, and if you want to know, read the comments below the videos.
That's what we say every week on the show. It's where it's all going down, is in the comments section.
Yeah, it really does give you insights. You know, there were some people when we originally started talking about the project who said, really? Is it still that big of a deal to be gay and come out? You know, and I sometimes think that in the coasts and in the bluest of the blue states, we really forget what people are still struggling with, where it gets slightly purple and deeply red.
Right.
And it's absolutely evident just looking underneath the most sweet, delicate, kind videos, and then beneath it are these horrible comments. And, you know, that's the feeling and sentiment that exists in these communities where these kids are trying to come out. So we're really anxious to get out there to present the communities with some of these comments and some of these ideas and see how they feel about it.
And what kind of hook can we put out there so that we don't, you know, I see you guys touring around, and I want you to get folks who aren't part of the choir. How do we get the folks who aren't already signed on to, oh, yes, of course, I support the GSA in the high school, and I want to be a chaperone of the queer prom. How do we get the folks that we really do need to reach?
We tell them Spider-Man is in it.
There you go.
No, you know,
I really liked that idea.
the truth is that theater hopefully will help. There'll be a group of people who are normally performing arts patrons, including those little wonderful ladies with the hats who come out. You know, and sometimes I've taken some really controversial projects out before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, those little 80-year-old ladies with the hats are so cool and progressive, and they could become our change agents in these communities. You know, you also have all the people we'll meet during the week of the outreach. And part of that week, too, is going out one-on-one, connecting with people, and then saying, hey, we're doing this play. Are you going to come? And by the end of the week, we've met and talked with people one-on-one and brought them in, and that's a big part of it. But truthfully, I'm hoping it's the music. You know, people will go see anything, the musical, won't they?
Yes.
So while this isn't It Gets Better, the musical, with flashing lights and tinsel and glitter, the fact that there's music and that there is going to be a live concert should help make it more palatable and or inviting to wider audiences. Music is a wonderful way to break down barriers. Every year I go to the Gay Men's Chorus holiday concert. Every year I try and take somebody who's kind of borderline on the whole gay thing, and by the end they're in tears and I think they're converted.
Nice.
And I think that music can accomplish that. So that's why the music is there.
Now my assumption,
also,
oh, go ahead, Jimmy.
A real interesting hook to the use of a community chorus. be part of the show, because then it will get a large group of people who are already in that small community invested into the show because they're performing. And if it's a church choir, even better, right? Because, you know, we need to get the communities of faith behind the It Gets Better message as well. So I think having a community chorus involved and integrated into the show will help get more people to bring their friends, their family to the show to listen to the message.
Now, my assumption is, and you have to tell me if I'm wrong, my assumption is that there will be a rendition of True Colors somewhere in this.
Yeah, I'm going to defer to Lisa.
I think it's inevitable. You know, the Gay Men's Chorus did a video of True Colors for the project, and I think it's had like 700,000 hits. It's one of the top videos in the Gay Men, in the It Gets Better project. But they've had such an outpouring around the world, from other countries, South Africa. Someone started a True Colors Foundation, totally unlicensed. Jimmy, please don't sue them. I know you're a lawyer. But, you know, the song really did resonate. And, again, it's a positive song. I think there's so much negativity in the rhetoric that can surround the bullying issue, and in particular the discourse about gay rights, that it was so nice when It Gets Better came along, because here's something that's positively framed. It's three really positive, upbeat words. And so the show is going to be that way, too. You know, this really isn't going to be anti-anything. It's how do we survive on the positive side? How do we talk to the people who need the assistance and not try and, you know, get obsessed with the bullying? The bullying will exist. The bullying is probably not going to go away, but we can fortify, motivate, and support the people who are trying to survive it and create more allies for them.
Now, what do you need from our listeners? How can they help with this great project?
Do any of them sew? There's costumes, sets. I need painters.
I can paint. I can do that.
Perfect.
But we mostly right now need some money. We have launched a campaign on Kickstarter.com, which is this online crowdsourcing, crowdfunding vehicle, which helps to spur funding for creative projects. We feel like we need about a projected budget of $75,000 to develop the show, which pays for all kinds of things, rehearsal space, you know, some payments to the cast, music licenses, which are going to be hugely important for this, because we are going to be using popular songs, which is important to get people wanting to listen to this concert-style theater. And all of those things come with a cost before we can get the show on the road. So we only have until April 30th, 14 more days.
Oh, my gosh.
Taping of this to meet our $75,000 goal, because how Kickstarter works is that you set a goal, you set a deadline, people pledge, but their credit cards are not charged unless the project is fully funded. And if it doesn't hit that goal, then all the people who pledged we don't get their money. And so it's really important. A lot of people have pledged so far. As of right now, 9:51 a.m. Pacific time on April 16th, I'm looking at it online. We have $26,469 pledged with 156 people backing the project. So we have, you know, a little under $50,000 to go. So we'd love to raise another $50,000 over the next 2 weeks. We know we can do it if people just spread the word around. And Kickstarter works with small contributions.
Yeah.
You know, there's $5, $10, $25, $50 contributions, and if a lot of people do that, it will hit our goal. Some other benefits they'll get is, one, the contributions are tax deductible. They'll be made to the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles, which
That's
is a
perfect time. Reminds them it's tax week. Yes.
Tax week. Taxes due tomorrow. Right. So it's a perfect time, even though you won't get the benefit till next year, but that's okay.
That's okay.
It's tax deductible, and there are rewards that are offered that we will provide to contributors at various levels. If you go look on our Kickstarter page, you'll see them, including at certain levels, a thank you card from the show's creator and cast, a nice It Gets Better stainless steel water bottle.
Lovely.
Higher levels at $250 and up tickets to a show in the city of your choice from the schedule that will be released later of our U.S. tour. And at really high levels, you can even get a producer credit for the first season of the show.
Nice.
So to find us on Kickstarter, what you should do is go to Kickstarter.com, and at the homepage, just in the search function, enter either It Gets Better or GMCLA, which is Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles. So either Kickstarter search for It Gets Better or GMCLA on Kickstarter. It will pull up our page. There will be a video explaining the whole project and where the money goes and the different pledge levels.
Now, I read an op-ed in The Advocate a few months ago that indicated that folks were perhaps not contributing as much as they possibly could to various LGBT organizations.
Beautifully written op-ed.
It was quite well written, quite well written. But given that I have read such a piece, how do we sell this to a community that is not giving as much as they could be giving?
I'll answer that one. One, it'll make more money. You know, everybody's into capitalism. This project is going to be self-funding.
Great.
Every performance of It Gets Better is going to be paid for by the local presenting group. So they're going to pay it, and the money eventually will, this should be a profit-making organization, a profit-making show that will send money both back to It Gets Better and to the Gay Men's Chorus High School Outreach Project for years to come. So we're not going to keep coming back and asking anybody for money. We're trying to start up something that will actually be a viable business model.
Nice.
We're already going to make that money back within the first year of touring, but we can't get there without some startup funds to pay for the cost. I'd also like to really call on the straight folks who are listening. Please alleviate some of your longstanding gay guilt. If you want to do something, because I know a lot of straight people sometimes don't quite know what they can do, This is a great project. If you watch the It Gets Better Project videos, there's a lot of straight people who are contributing, and this is a wonderful way that you can participate by getting involved in this project. It's time that we go wide and far with our support of LGBT issues. It's not a gay issue anymore, and I really encourage you even to pledge at the $5 level and show that you're on board.
Nice. Nice.
And I think that's an important last point, particularly, you know, the big difference between this and that really scintillating op-ed article you were referencing is that, you know, the LGBT organizations often look for donors at high levels.
Right.
They need to support a fundraising dinner, event, buy a table, buy a sponsorship. And it's hard for a lot of people to write a $5,000, $1,000 check. Here, we would gladly take your $5. We'd gladly take more. But if we got 1,000 people over the next couple of days to all contribute $5, $10, $20, imagine the multiplying effect that has.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, when this project is all done, I heard a rumor that there's going to be some sort of speech and debate club, the musical, coming out that you two are working on. Is that correct?
Well, you know, because it's just so interesting to everyone what happens at speech and debate tournaments. Well, you know, Jimmy, as you can tell from this, was a champion speaker when he was in college, and I've been a speech coach for years. And at some point, yes, we need to unload our obsession onto the world. It's one of those activities that nobody knows about. It's kind of this mysterious thing that all of these people do on weekends all around the country. So maybe someday we'll unleash the secret life of the American debater on everybody.
As a former New Jersey debate club champion, I just would like to say I want producer credit on this one coming up.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, please don't spread in your rebuttal and we'll be fine.
Jimmy, give us the website one more time. Where should we be going?
Go to Kickstarter.com so the Kickstarter people can thank us for the plug, too, and search for It Gets Better or GMCLA and make your pledge today. Please, we only have until April 30th to meet our $75,000 deadline. So 14 days, about $50,000 to go, and we need your support.
Now, Lisa, what if I'm in a community that would love to book the show to come to my community?
Two things. Call your local performing arts center and tell them. They might already know about it. They can also go to DL Artists with an S on it, DavidLiebermanArtists.com, or you can link to that through the GMCLA.org website. They're the management company that's producing the tour. So far, we can't say the exact name because they're almost about to announce their seasons, but if you are in the states of Iowa, Washington State, New York, California, or Kansas, we're pretty sure that you're going to have a good chance of seeing this show in the next season, and there'll be probably more added to that list as well.
So I got to work on setting up the Vermont show.
Yeah, we definitely have to get that going.
All right, I'm on it. Hey, Liesl and Jimmy, it sounds like a pretty darn good project to me. This is pretty exciting, right?
It's fabulous. Thank you so much for giving us some attention.
No, absolutely. So, folks, head on over to Kickstarter. Do what you need to do to give to this project. There's not a lot of time left, so we got to enable it happening all over the country. Jimmy, Liesl, an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Good luck with all of this.
Thanks, Doc.
Thanks, Ken.
All right, folks, we are at the end of the show. We do not have much time left, but one of our listeners down in Tennessee sent an email on over to Ken at thisshowsogay.com, and he wrote, quote, Ken, how have you not yet covered the Don't Say Gay bill that is tarnishing our state's reputation? Please cover this story. So, of course, because we respond to each and every email, we will cover this story very quickly, and especially today because there's been some advancements in this story. Tennessee's Don't Say Gay bill is headed to the full House for consideration after having barely made it out of a committee today. The House Education Committee voted 8-7 to advance the bill, but that didn't include Republican Chairman Richard Montgomery, and Republican Governor Bill Haslam has repeatedly said he wishes lawmakers would move on to more important issues. The governor hasn't gone so far as to say he would veto the measure if it comes to him, but he really wants folks to move on. This bill would bar teachers and administrators from any talk of homosexuality before high school, and violators, these are teachers and administrators, they would face fines and jail times. Backers of the bill don't appear to be backing down. This is a quote from the bill's sponsor, Republican Representative Joey Hensley, who apparently has so much free time on his hand. He said, quote, I have two children in the third and fourth grade and don't want them to be exposed to things I don't agree with. And apparently, by passing the Don't Say Gay bill, that's going to guarantee that his children in the third and fourth grade will never be exposed to things that Republican Representative Joey Hensley does not agree with. Good luck with that, Joey Hensley. But yes, I could not agree more. Who knew I would ever say this? I could not agree more with the Republican governor of Tennessee. Folks, lawmakers, legislators in Tennessee, you need to move on to other things. There are really important things happening right now, not just in Tennessee, but in the rest of the country. You should not have time to work on a Don't Say Gay bill. I don't even know what's going on in Tennessee, and yet I feel comfortable saying you should not have time to work on a Don't Say Gay bill. And with that, of course, we responded to one of our listeners' emails. If you have something you want to tell us, a story you want us to cover, or a guest idea, just send that email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. You got to stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com because you can check out all of our upcoming guests. Next week, one of our favorite guests is coming back to the show, Will Clark, who's not been on in quite some time. He's got a lot of amazing things that he's working on. So we're going to talk to Will. And then in upcoming weeks, incredible, incredible guests coming up. And of course, right there on thisshowissogay.com, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Then you don't even have to download it every week. It'll download automatically for you. iTunes does that service for you. And you can check out all of our past shows, check out all of our past guests, look at the stations we're on. And of course, find out about all of our co-hosts, because that's very important. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show So Gay, like us, we like you, you know the drill. Get out there, folks. Go do some incredible things this week. Use your voice. And while you're doing it, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Your truth.